Mariella, are you going to present?
Yes. Good morning. Agenda paper 9. In May, the committee discussed which fees and costs should be included in the 10% test for the purpose of derecognition of a financial liability. In particular, the discussion focused on whether an entity includes fees and costs incurred on the modification or exchange of a financial liability that are paid to third parties in the 10% test. The committee noted that the objective of the 10% test is to quantitatively assess the significance of any difference between the old and new contractual terms by analyzing the effect of the changes in the contractual cash flows between the lender and the borrower. Consequently, when carrying out the 10% test, an entity includes only fees paid or received between the lender and the borrower. In contrast, any costs or fees relating to a modification or exchange represent costs directly attributable to the modification or exchange, including third-party fees. On the basis of the existing requirements, the committee decided not to add this issue onto its agenda and issued a tentative agenda decision. We received three comment letters. None of the respondents disagreed with the technical conclusion reached in the tentative agenda decision. However, two respondents suggested that the most appropriate way to clarify the question submitted would be by either making an amendment to the standards or issuing an interpretation. We think that the agenda decision identified the key principles in the standards underlying the 10% test, and in our view, those principles are sufficient to allow an entity to determine which fees and costs to include in the 10% test. In addition, on the basis of the feedback received in the outreach, that in most cases, including third-party fees, would not affect the outcome of the test, and considering that none of the respondents have questioned the technical conclusion of the tentative agenda decision, we think that the agenda decision clarifies the question submitted in a cost-effective way. Appendix A to the paper includes editorial changes to the published tentative agenda decision, and the question that we have for the Interpretations Committee is whether it agrees with the staff recommendation to finalize the agenda decision set out in Appendix A of the paper.
One clarification. When we say an agenda decision is cost effective, we're referring to the costs incurred across the entire body of our users, not just our internal costs. I know at least one person read the paper and said, well, you know, I grumble about that point. And so we ought to make it clear that we're talking about the most efficient way for the system, which includes everybody, to deal with these issues. Martin and then Bruce.
I understand how we get to the results. But in a way, I believe it is not a must that we have to get to that result. In other words, I really have a challenge to understand the difference in the topic we formally discussed, IAS 28 net investment, and our outcome there, that we end up in an interpretation, and the result we have here, that we say we do not need a kind of interpretation, because I do not believe that the standard is really that absolutely clear that we have to arrive to that conclusion. It is a possible conclusion, and I support that conclusion, yes, but nevertheless, it is a kind of interpretation. On the other hand, and this is more from a practical and enforcement perspective, and I guess I also said that last time, if you really say, oh, that is absolutely brilliant clear that you have to arrive to that conclusion, then the companies who have accounted for in another way for a kind of modification with regard to their fees, then they have done something wrong in the past. So also from that perspective, this is a quite formal one, I know. It is important to differentiate what it really is. Is it something which is brilliant and absolutely clear from the past, which then would be the outcome of a non-interpretation explaining why it was brilliant clear in the past, or is it something which needs such a high degree of, say, judgment, or say, turn into one specific direction that an interpretation would be the appropriate outcome.
Katrina?
Sorry, I was just going to come back, Martin, I suppose, on a couple of things that you said there. And I suppose my view of when we issue an agenda decision is not necessarily at all saying we're doing it only in the circumstances where we say the requirements are crystal clear and almost anybody who didn't read it that way must be standing on their head or whatever. In fact, almost by definition, we shouldn't be discussing an issue. You know, if an issue is submitted to us, it says there isn't necessarily exact requirements that tells you what to do in that exact transaction or situation. There is some interpretation, maybe is the wrong word, but you know, you need to read under the umbrella of, you know, you need to read into what the requirements say and work out how to apply the requirements to the particular transaction in question. And so there is some discussion to be had. However, having done the analysis and have some discussion, what we're potentially saying then is it's not necessarily that there's an exact requirement for the exact transaction. However, we think that the principles and the requirements that underlie those principles, having done that analysis, are sufficient to say that is, you know, that is how you would account for this transaction.
Well, shortly after I took this job, I met with the trustees, and I assured them then and will assure you all now, we are not in the correction of an error business for a couple of reasons. Number one, an agenda decision does not, under our literature, impose a change in accounting policy. Now, Ton and his friends may decide that it does, but again, we're not in the business of characterizing anything as a correction of an error. The end result of us doing so would wind up in me having to testify in various lawsuits that resulted from that, and I'm not interested in doing that. Nor does it serve any of our purposes. So I think we need to be clear that, yes, we're saying this is how we all read the literature, and this is the answer we get to, but absent some other action, it doesn't require anybody to do anything. So, I understand your sensitivity in the German board's comment letter raised the correction of an error specter, but I think we need to say no, that ain't the business we're in. Let's get a couple of other people and then, Sandy.
Wayne, may I respond to that?
Well, yeah, given that you're a regulator, that'd be good.
I think you are right. When there is a template or agenda decision or an agenda decision, you cannot say by definition, okay, the application in the past was not reasonable. It was not reasonable to come to the conclusion to apply the accounting standard as was done. However, I believe that in every situation, the issuer has to assess himself whether he could reasonably come to the conclusion and the accounting he came to in the past after reading the agenda decision. So it's not by definition, but it could be that after an agenda decision, an issuer has to conclude that in fact it was an error the way he applied the standard, but not by definition. Thank you.
Certainly, not only by definition, not by our intent.
And I'll just add to that, if it's helped, just a quote from the due process handbook sort of says that our agenda decisions should be seen as helpful, informative, and persuasive, which to me says this is now a sort of putting out an agenda decision says there is a new piece of information now available to people that may be persuasive and informative and helpful.
I don't want to belabor this point, but let's let Kumar come in and then I'll navigate backward.
Go ahead. The points Katrina's made.
Okay, Sue.
I think Martin's question's a fair challenge because I think we need to be consistent in terms of when we're deciding to go with agenda decisions versus interpretations. But on that, I think I see a couple of key differences between this situation and the IFRS 9 IAS 28 situation. The first, I think, is just the fact that it took us, I don't know how many meetings between both the board and the interpretations committee to agree that we thought what that the interaction between interaction between 9 and 28 worked. It wasn't an easy analysis, proven by the number of papers and analysis we had to do. So I think it's harder in that situation to say, of course, that's how the words work. Whereas here, we only had one paper, and we managed to get there, and it was a pretty quick discussion from what I thought of, so that from what I remember. The other key thing, I think, which is different to the 9 and 28 situation is, I think here we do have a principle to look at in the context of then reading the words that follow. And the basic idea we start with is, are the terms such that this looks like it's the same instrument or a different instrument? And I think given that context, it helps us read the words in terms of what the intent is of these costs and fees. And I think that was very much from memory what the staff analysis used as the anchor last time as well. So I think that principle really helps us. 9 and 28, we don't have that sort of principle so much to fall back on. So I see that as a key difference as well. In principle-based literature, I think we should, if people want us to write something every time we had to ask a question of how to interpret, we're going to end up with more interpretations than we've got IFRS standards.
Absolutely. That's a point which I was trying to make, Wayne, which is that the issue when we did an outreach and everything, it's not that the question came up. So any question that comes up here won't be that crystal clear, but it got clarified in one meeting. Most of the people are telling us this is not critical or material. So if you have to go and do an interpretation on this one, I think it also sets a precedent where we won't do it, because I think this is one of the smaller issues.
Okay, I think we've beat that up pretty well. Reinhardt?
I agree with the agenda decision and finalizing it. I just had one comment with respect to the drafting, where in the second last paragraph, just to clarify that what we really mean to say is that it's the fees paid by the borrower to or on behalf of the lender, and fees paid by the lender or to or on behalf of the borrower. And so it's just the English.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Andrew?
I'm fairly comfortable with the agenda decision. The only thing that I wonder if it might bring out more clearly is that when you look at B336 and what was AG62, it really is more like two paragraphs in one.
Yes.
Because the first sentence tells you, first of all, to compare the cash flows, and that tells you whether you've got a significant difference. And then having done that and decided whether you're going to derecognize or not, the second half then tells you what to do. And articulating it that way might help constituents see more clearly that the first sentence is focusing purely on the lender and borrower, and then the second half of that paragraph focuses on the wider transaction costs. And I think that might help get people on board and understand why we've come to the conclusion we have.
Yeah. Okay, point taken. Bonnie?
Just a quick one. I agree with the conclusion. It was just a question as to whether or not this could be part of the annual improvements instead of an agenda decision, just kind of to Martin's point, do we really want to have this kind of conclusion in an agenda decision?
So, what would that improvement be?
The clarification.
So you're proposing we change the drafting through the
plan? It was a question. I guess I don't know if that would still be timely enough or not, but that could help resolve the issue that Martin brought up. So
I suppose the question was, is if we do an annual improvement, will you be suggesting an amendment to the standard? And I suppose from our perspective, we're not sure what the amendment is.
I mean, you would use some of the words that are in here. I understand I don't disagree with what's here. It was just, I understand how auditors and regulators use the agenda decisions.
One of the things, yes, the question is timely. Absolutely, that's something we can look at. But the other thing also, if you look at the agenda consultation, people are a bit worried about the tweaking because they see it as a bigger threshold of the standard. The question is, do we need to do it? And also, if this will do the job, I think it'll be faster to get it out there.
Faster for sure. I think it's just the interplay with how auditors and regulators might view this in terms of ISA. That I was just trying to see if there was some way to resolve that particular issue. Like I said, agree with where we got to. Don't disagree with the agenda decision necessarily, other than that point.
Okay, Young Soo.
Yeah, naturally, I prefer interpretation instead of agenda decision. I want to say a few things. The first one is the perception. Korea is not a common law country. Korea is a statutory law country. So once this is issued as agenda decision, many people will think that what they have done in the past is wrong. It's an error. They have to stick to this. They have to follow it because they think agenda decision is a law for them. So that is what I'm really worrying about. Not just Korea, I think Germany is also a statutory law country, and many other countries are not accustomed to the common law. So their perception could be very different from the perception we have in this meeting. That is the first reason why I support for the interpretation. And the other one is that, you know, before I come to this meeting, I talked with one of the financial institutions in Korea and just asked them what is the impact of this third-party fees and costs in the test of 10%. And they said that, you know, it could be sometimes very big, and many companies in my country would be affected by this agenda decision or interpretation. So I shouldn't say, impact of this decision is not material. It could be material for some constituents, for some countries. So we shouldn't underestimate the effect.
Young Soo, just to not wanting to argue the point, but to ask a question. Korea has been adopted 3 years ago now?
And 5 years.
5 years ago? Huh?
Yes.
And we've done a lot of agenda decisions.
Yeah. Right.
I haven't heard any problem with that process until now.
Actually, I didn't know that either. Actually, when I read this one, not the complaints, but comment letters from the German Accounting Association, I thought this could be a problem in Korea too. Because, I've never experienced any problem with the agenda decision yet, but once this is going to be known, many people will think about this issue. What's the difference between agenda decision and interpretations, and when they restate the financial statements, what they have to do? Is it an error? Is it just a change of accounting policy? Actually, there could be, as I said, we are kind of statutory law. So that we really didn't think deeply into this issue, the difference between agenda decision and interpretations.
But Young Soo, that will appreciate what the feedback we have got on the materiality is actually the feedback we received from the comment letters. Most of the cases, yes, if it can, certain occasions it can be material. But the point is, as Wayne pointed out, we've done quite a few agenda decisions over the 5 years, over the last 3 years, I think I've done over 40 IFRIC papers, and so far there have been agenda decisions. I appreciate the point, but the question that I'm asking is, for this issue, going through the process of doing a full interpretation of where we do an exposure draft, comment letters, and everything, first, it delays it. Secondly, is it necessary? It's getting the message out.
Well, I understand the point. I read them in the agenda paper. I fully understand an agenda decision is a much faster and cost-effective method.
Let me suggest this. Now, I'd like to let the conversation continue. Some point, I'm going to ask the committee what it wants to do, because the staff works for the committee, not the other way around. So if the committee believes that we ought to do an interpretation or an annual improvement, that's what we will do. And I don't want to assure you of that, but let's let the conversation go first. And then as we reach the wrap up, I have another bit I want to throw into the mix. Bruce?
Thanks, Wayne. Yeah, I'm not going to labor the point I initially was coming in on. I mean, to be consistent with the comments I made in May, I was supportive of this being an interpretation. But I think if you're going to address that later, let's...
Well, no, that's going to be the question,
isn't it?
That's
what I'm saying, so...
Tony?
So I think there's a need to draw a balance, which is what the staff has tried to do here. My sense is there is some diversity at the moment. People have read the words differently. I have no objection to where the staff has landed. I think that probably is where the principle steers you, although there have been folks have looked at it differently. So if you think of the criteria for what we might take onto the agenda, yes, there is diversity. Yes, financial reporting would be improved by eliminating that diversity. My sense is that it could be material for those affected. It's not widespread, but if a company is affected and it changes the outcome, then the impact could be material. And I guess I share Wayne's thoughts and whatever about is it an error or not. No, I don't think it's an error. And I think in a lot of cases with agenda decisions, companies have been able to work through that. The residual concern that I have with an agenda decision is that we can't give transition guidance. And so if there is a company out there for whom this is material, how do they transition? Because it's one of those things, I think, if we were to do an interpretation, we would probably think about giving some relief for decisions that were made way back when. And I suppose that's the balance that I was wrestling with is, I think if you do have a company out there for whom this is material, then it might be difficult for them to go back and figure out what the adjustments are. Now, obviously, there might have been a big impact 5 years ago. The ongoing income effect through the income statement is not significant. I don't know. And so that's why I'd just be interested in reactions to how you might see folks that, not widespread, I agree, but folks that figure that it might be material or figure that it is material, figuring out what adjustments they might need to make.
It's the borderline case which could give the case.
I was just going to ask Tony that I don't know how often to choose, but obviously there are some words in IS 8 to try and help the deal with where it is impracticable to, you know, apply something on a fully retrospective basis, and it tells you, you know, it gives you then what you do, you go back as far as you can, etc. I mean, do you not think that could come into play if necessary?
It's a question, it will depend on that, frankly, Tony, whether you have the information, because it's flagging which is the fee you have or not, and whether you have that information or not. Because as Bruce also said, it's flipping in and out, because that's what will make the difference, because it's a threshold. If it is big enough, you have considered it or not, whether you are there, it will have. It's a flip. But the question is, to do that computation also, I think you must have some data, and whether that data is stored or not. That's the whole point.
And I think that's, and I think the challenge, I think typically you'd look at the guidance that says it's not practicable to make a retrospective change. I think that will be typically that's a high hurdle. Whereas if we were doing this as an interpretation, we may well tell people you don't need to do that assessment. And I think that's the distinction. Yes, I agree with you. You might be able to look at that IS 8, and maybe that will be the solution.
For my sins, one of my first jobs in standard setting was to prepare an analysis of transition in emerging issues task force consensus. In US GAAP, we had the advantage, and Sandy's going to scream at me, that the assumption is always prospective unless it's stated otherwise. But that goes back an awful long time. Let's go back around, catch Martin and Bob. And then we'll come back to Mary.
Tony found very smart words for describing the issue. We might have situations where we have now would have a modification, and before that it was accounted for as a settlement, because we would see more modifications of debt than settlements, due to the fact that potentially former these costs have not been included in the 10% test. And then, for sure, we end up with a material issue, because I believe it is completely different to have a settlement accounting than a modification of debt. And these companies, for sure, are affected. How we might avoid it, I have no real clue to it. The best thing is, would say, okay, going forward, if you are doing that kind of test, then please apply this kind of non-interpretation view we are going to publish. However, as said, in general, if we still have this debt instruments on balance, we probably have to consider that. So that would mean it would have an implication on current accounting. It might be painful, however, it would not be impractical, as the data are obviously there with regard to the transaction. So without giving an additional hint that we believe that it's only more or less worth to apply it prospectively, the sample of companies would have an issue.
Okay.
And I have no clue how to incorporate that in an agenda decision that the committee believes that, say, for past transactions this issue was not that material. However, for future transactions, one should apply this.
All right. Before I go to Bob and Mary, I should go to the phone. John, are you on the phone?
I am, Wayne, yes.
Anything to add?
No, I agree with the staff recommendation. I don't think an interpretation or a standard amendment is necessary. I also think that I'm also concerned that the idea that we feel we might have to issue an interpretation because people might consider that that the agenda decision gives the impression that there's a past error. I mean, that arises every time we issue an agenda decision. There are people who have to reconsider their past accounting. I don't think that's a basis for issuing an interpretation rather than an agenda decision. So, and I think the standard is clear enough that this can be, that we should issue an agenda decision and doesn't require further authoritative literature.
Okay, Sandy?
I don't have any further comments. I would agree with what John just said.
Okay. Bob and...
Wait.
Yes, Tom?
Wayne, I have an observation, and that is related to what is said in paragraph 12 of the agenda paper. There in the middle, it says, one accounting firm and an Asian national standard setter did not consider the 10% itself to be a dominant factor in the assessment of whether a financial liability has been substantially modified and consequently is derecognized. I went to the manuals of the Big Four, and in one of the manuals, I see that the standard does not clarify whether the 10% is an example of substantially different or a definition. So that accounting firm believes that there is an accounting policy choice. I was a little bit surprised when I read it. There is no response in the paper, I didn't see, on this observation. And I was wondering how the staff and the interpretation committee believes this is the case. So is the 10% test, is that an example or substantially different, or is the definition? And if there is doubt about this, there might be much more diversity in practice compared to the issue we are now talking about.
Well, I can tell you I was sitting at the table when that was written, and it was intended to be a definition.
Yes.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, 10's a nice number. It was 10 is it.
Yeah. That is how I understand it as well. But when I see here the comment, and when I go back to the one of the Big Four firms, and it is by coincidence that we have a debate with an issuer on this issue, and he is arguing that you can do a qualitative test as well to assess whether there is a derecognition or not. So I'm not sure that this goes well in practice, and maybe this should be added to the issue here if, because of the comment made by one of the accounting firms and a national standard setter.
I'm not groaning because it isn't a valid point. I'm groaning because it's a complication. Bob?
At the last meeting, I had been supportive. I was supportive of doing this as an interpretation instead of an agenda decision. And the primary reasons for that was, as Tony talked about, providing for some explicit transition. Part of it was because of the mode of communication and the fact that agenda decisions aren't found in the Red Book, and I thought this was a really important one that people could, reading just B336, can get very confused. They're not knowing exactly what is meant by fees. I wasn't thinking about the costs, so now thinking about that, I can live with an agenda decision, but I think Bonnie's suggestion is a good one in that even if we go down the path of an agenda decision, I don't know if that prevents later on, if there is there are an annual improvement and there are other improvements to 9, making an annual improvement to B336.
Okay. Mary, you're the wrap up.
Which may be good or bad because mine is a general observation rather than specific to this issue. My general observation is, first of all, agenda decisions should be issued when the interpretation committee makes a decision not to add something to its agenda. And so I think, you know, that's the first question you have to address. And I think it has to be addressed in the context of we want a healthy and open and constructive process rather, you know, that tries to help preparers and improve practice rather than motivating behavior that makes people reluctant to bring things forward when diversity in practice is issued. And I think that if we make the consequence of an agenda decision that captures the committee's discussion of how much lack of clarity is there, having put the muscle of some time, some outreach, and some staff research, even if it then can be resolved in one issue, if we make the consequences of that punitive, then there's a loss of a... It makes the process sclerotic. You know, it will take massive efforts to address even the tiniest things because an agenda decision will be seen as punitive for anybody who had done anything different and ever in the past. And I think the valid questions are how much clarity is there once you put the muscle behind it, et cetera? Does it need an interpretation? And if it doesn't provide the guidance, at least in one place, I think Bob's point is a good general observation that when a standard is being touched for annual improvements or for some other reason, to maybe consider whether there are points that have been covered in agenda decisions that might helpfully be incorporated. That's just a general observation. But I think it does come back to saying after the analysis and discussion when it was discussed last, does the committee believe that there is such significant lack of clarity that the only way it can be resolved is through an interpretation or amendment? And if that's not the case, then I think a reminder that we're all trying to work cooperatively to improve practice and to encourage people to bring things forward as they become aware of it, and let's not drop lead weights on them, you know, in the form of agenda decisions is maybe kind of a package that is a message we all have to carry out, not just about this one, but more generally. So I'll stop pontificating now.
Okay, well then I'll start pontificating. This is an interesting reversal of discussions that used to happen around the Interpretations Committee and our fellows in FASB, which was that the fact that we discussed an issue at all meant that there was lack of consensus, which meant that you can't have any correction of an error, because if it was a correction of an error, you already would have fixed it. And so the fact that it even came to the table meant that you had some kind of a reasonable view. Now we've kind of flipped it over and says, turned it upside down. Tony's absolutely right. We don't have a vehicle for explicit transition guidance. And you do have to fall back on 8. And when you fall back on 8, I think even for a policy choice, you're in retrospective, aren't you?
Yeah, if it's a change in accounting policy as opposed to a change in accounting estimate.
Which this would be a policy choice or a policy change. Before I tell you what I'm going to do to follow up on the general point, should I have show of hands, I don't see anybody who disagrees with the conclusion. Show of hands who believe that this ought to be an interpretation.
2, 3, 4.
Sandy, did you want an interpretation, or are you happy with the agenda decision?
I was happy with the agenda decision.
Okay. And John, you said that you were happy with the agenda decision?
Yes, I'm happy with the agenda decision.
Okay. I do not then see enough support for proceeding to an interpretation.
I was going to get
to annual improvements next, because where are we in the annual improvement cycle, Petrina?
We are at the which is not relevant anyway. We're finalizing some from last year, and we also have approval from the board to put out an ED for 2 annual improvements already. The however on that would be that whilst we're all systems go in a sense in terms of getting approval for that, one thing we did say that those 2 items in that annual improvement are quite small things and not overly urgent. So we, in terms of when we would publish that, we try to line it up together with another exposure draft.
Sue is looking daggers at me at the thought of anything on 9, but she's not looking daggers at me. How many would support in adding this to annual improvements?
Instead
of the agenda decision. Okay, I'm not getting a physical count, but that's the large majority of the room. Sandy?
That's fine.
So what do we do? John?
Publishing agenda decision.
Sorry, where in your question is an annual improvement rather than an agenda decision?
I think when we say something goes to annual improvements, we say in the agenda decision what it's going to be, but we don't publish it in the same form as
check that.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, we'll check. We'll check precisely, but it seems to me we say we're going to do an annual improvement to say X. Then goes into the annual improvement cycle. I guess we'd have a paper come back to the committee, but it wouldn't say an awful lot different than what we have in front of us today.
No, and I suppose we question what's more efficient, because it would have to go to the board
to get board approval.
It may not be efficient to come back here.
I think the majority, sizable majority of the committee is for an annual improvement, so that's what we'll do.
When can I respond to that?
Yes, Don.
When the instrument, annual improvement, will be used, it will take a couple of years before it will be effective. And that means that, and especially because it is in the form of an annual improvement, that will mean that the standard is not clear and that you can proceed with the current accounting and the current diversity. So
that is one of the consequences, and the question is, should that consequence be accepted because of the possible issues for the transition? Because that what I understand from the discussion is the main reason for choosing the annual improvement cycle. So, as an advisor, I'm not sure I'm very happy with this position, to be honest.
Well, on the other hand, as far as our literature is concerned, an agenda decision does not compel a change in accounting policy. There's no question that IFRSs do not require you to change accounting policy because of an agenda decision.
You as an enforcer
might do that, but we don't.
That's true. On the other hand, in the agenda decision, you can read how you should read the standard and how it is interpreted by a committee, how they read it. And that might be helpful. And what I understood from the discussion, everybody agrees that the way you should read, in fact, the standard is how it is explained in the draft tentative agenda decision. So everybody believes that that's the right way. So that raises the question, okay, is the annual improvement cycle the right instrument? Because it seems that it is clear. The concerns are about the transition provision. That's the only thing. So
understood.
I'm a little bit surprised, and I'm not sure that the balance is now right. Apart from that, I'm still wondering what will happen with my observation about the 10% as a definition or an example.
I think we have to take that offline.
That's it, Don.
I gave you my reaction, and I think it's consistent with the FI team, but we'll take that offline. Bob and
Wayne, it's John. Sorry, Wayne, it's John here. Just for
John.
Clarity, I don't agree with an annual improvement.
You do not agree with an annual improvement? Okay.
No, I don't agree with an annual improvement. I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. Bob and then Mary? Bob, then Sue, then Mary. Let's do it that way.
There may be points.
Just a second, Bob. Let me get your mic turned on. There we go.
There might be points that will raise that I wasn't thinking about, but the reason why I suggested doing it as an agenda decision followed by an annual improvement instead of just an annual improvement is that I recognize that the board might not want to open up IFRS 9 and not make an annual improvement, and then we've lost a lot of time coming back and then issuing the agenda decision after that. So I didn't know what would preclude us or what would be harmful if we issued the agenda decision followed by asking the board to consider an annual improvement.
Andrew?
Just one point in the annual improvement, and it relates to some of the comment letters that we received, that a few of the respondents said that while they agreed with the technical analysis that was one way of doing it, they didn't think it was absolutely clear that it was the only way. And perhaps that might persuade us that an annual improvement would be the way to deal with it by clarifying guidance.
Sue?
I think a couple of things worry me with this process. One is, if we're going to start thinking that whenever we are worried about, you know, transition effects or how people are going to impose agenda decisions once they're published outside the building, I'm not sure how we're going to be able to respond to issues on a timely basis. So I think there's broader considerations here that we should be thinking carefully about. Also, as a board member, when the staff come to me and talk about an annual improvement in this area, I think one of my concerns is going to be what we're doing to principles-based standards. So we've got a principle in this standard which says look at how different the contractual cash flows are and decide whether or not it's the same instrument or not. And then we're saying, but that's not enough. We need to come along and add extra words in to be exactly specific on what cash flows we're talking about. And if we start doing that, I really wonder where that leads us with principles-based standards ultimately. We need to be encouraging people to look at the principles and read the words in the context of the principles. And I just worry, if we're not confident enough to do that in agenda decisions, how can we ask that of other people? And I'll hop off my soapbox now. But, I'm not sure that the board's just going to say, yeah, great idea, annual improvement. That's
okay. Mary, did you want to come in, or are you?
I said no problem. Dave, much of what I was going to say, I share Sue's caution about potential for board reluctance to set a precedent in terms of an annual approval. Not because of the specific issue, but because of the process.
Let me.
Bonnie.
Okay, Bonnie, we're already past time, so this is it.
Yep, just quickly, I could get behind what Bob was saying, that an agenda decision followed by a recommendation to the board for an annual improvement. Because I think that I agree with Bob that I don't want to lose the discussion that we have with, but I do think that there does need to be some clarity. So to me, that seems like a reasonable solution.
Let us take a look at what we put in update as a consequence of saying we think there's an annual improvement to be done and we think it should be X, and see how that's, if that's what we've done in the past. I don't remember.
We will certainly think about it. I just find it slightly strange, I suppose, because if the conclusion is we need an annual improvement, to Tom's point, that's almost saying we think we need a change to the requirements. And yet an agenda decision usually goes out when we say this is how you should read the requirements already. So even though the reason we would do the agenda decision is try to create clarity now, that we think that clarity might go away for 2 years or something otherwise, I think almost the fact that we then say, but we think we need an annual improvement, would take away the meaning from that clarity.
And it's tricky, because I thought the committee had previously agreed that that was how the word should be read.
Yeah. Well, we published it.
I mean, if the board disagrees with us, then we're going to change with the agenda decision and potentially change again, based on costs.
No.
Well, I'm sorry.
The board would not disagree
with the technical analysis.
With the technical analysis, they might disagree with whether or not they want to do an annual improvement.
As long as, I'm just saying that that's my concern, is that's the precedent we set. I mean, if we're prepared to issue agenda decisions and then go to improvements, okay, this one I agree, this one's I think pretty easier, but it's a difficult precedent to set, because if we're going to start issuing agenda decisions and recommending annual improvements.
I can't. I don't see the potential for changing twice. But all right, let me do this. I'm going to call it, Martin. We're done. But I'm not sure exactly what I'm calling. Let the staff take a look back at how we have done it in the past and articulated the idea of wanting something in annual improvements. And we will share that with you. We cannot hold a vote offline. The last vote that we held showed support for an annual improvement. If it appears to you or to the staff, and I'm not going to hold a vote offline, that we need to bring this back, we'll bring it back.
Sorry, so what do we do with the update this time? Go with the annual improvement?
I think Carl's got a point. I think we have to say ongoing. We will bring back for a public discussion what an annual improvement would look like. That's what Sunshine requires.
I think that would be better.
On another point, we have a new person on the staff here who deals with the Due Process Oversight Committee, Richard Thorpe, who is, I have known him a long time, and he's a quality person. He and I have already agreed that we need to have a discussion potentially with the DPOC, Due Process Oversight Committee, about agenda decisions. It's been 5 years since we changed the way we did them and said that we want to provide help when it's possible. And so it's worthwhile revisiting that. I will report back to you in writing, perhaps not at the next meeting, if not that in January, or whenever we meet first next year, the results of those discussions and any recommendations that we have taking them forward. Okay? So we have one issue that we didn't get to.
AP 8.
We'll get to it next time.
It'll be a heavy FI session next time. We've got two more fun issues.
I told my wife that there's always one issue that explodes. And we proved that this morning. Thank you all very much.
Sorry.